You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Rabin. This is episode 63. Thank you for joining me once again in my little online podcast diary, whatever the shit this is. Checking in. It's another week. We're in September now, even though the temperature's like, nah, we think it's summer. Here it is. It's 101 degrees again here in Austin, Texas. So, but, you know, on paper, it's fall. So I hope you're staying sober, sober people. If you're not sober and you enjoy me, I hope you're staying sane in the heat. I'm doing all right. We're about a week away. I guess next week I'll talk about hitting my year 7 mark, I guess, of being sober. I'll probably talk about that next week. What's happening for me this week? I mean, it's just things and such, just living, I guess, doing what I do. And fantasy football is back for me. Now, I don't expect you to understand it. I sure as shit didn't till I kind of got into it. Because I always loved football, the NFL specifically. I don't like following college. I just don't. I'll watch playoffs, championship stuff for college basketball and football because, you know, they play the hell out of it. It's great sports to watch for the competition, but just too much. Like, I have a certain amount of space for, like, names of players and teams and stuff, and it's just, and I basically went all in with the NFL, so it's the only thing I follow that closely where I can, you know, jump in a conversation with anybody and go, oh no, that's not, no, I think that that running back is I can fake my way through a conversation. I can understand what's going on. You know, it was the sport I played. So, you know, I understand formations, I understand offense and defense schemes. It's just a thing that I enjoy. So, fantasy football, and I didn't realize how much I missed it. I mean, I knew, but I didn't really know. But my girlfriend, when I was like, hey, babe, because we had both our, some of us have two different leagues that we're in. There's more, but there's two leagues that I'm in that are all comedians. And we had both of our drafts on Monday, on Labor Day, that evening, which by the end I was fucking exhausted, but just mentally. Because also, as somebody who's with the addictive personality and just goes all in and obsesses over shit, I basically spent my entire Labor Day researching. Because one of our leagues did auction draft, which I didn't know what the fuck, how that worked. So I basically obsessed over that for hours, reading strategy and stuff. This is what I did. This is what I did when I didn't labor. But it was a good day. And I didn't realize how much I missed it till I told my girlfriend, yeah, I've got my two drafts today, babe, on Monday. And I'm like, I'm going to do this and this, and I'll see what you're up to later that evening. And she goes, I'm really happy for you that fantasy football is back. And she meant it genuinely. Because I guess I must have had this little layer of restlessness and just kind of sadness of nothing to distract me, like, in addition to, you know, having to pay too much attention to the news instead of just regular attention to go, oh man, this is some bullshit. Anyway, let's see what's up with football. So I at least have this distraction. And the best part about it is that, you know, I paid probably about $30. Because they're really low stakes. Comedians don't have money. So it's like $30 for both leagues together, basically. And, you know, this is, fantasy football is going to last us like 16 weeks, something like that. That's less than $2 a week I'm paying to obsess over something and to, you know, have fun. So I'm pumped. And I know that you're probably not, and you could care less. But I'm really excited. Can you tell? I've talked about it for 6 minutes. I must be. Anyway, I'll move on. But that's what's been going on with me this week. Stats. get started tomorrow. First game tomorrow. Yeah! Anyway. So I learned something at work last weekend. And I learned because I've, for a while, basically anytime there's any kind of an issue that comes up that I observe, usually it has to affect me. But if it's just in general, some issue that needs to be addressed at some point, that needs to be fixed, you know, I am usually always very vocal about it. Now, the problem with that is that if everything that comes out of your, if every time management hears from me, it's about, hey, this is not working, this thing. At some point, I'm just the, like I've described myself as the boy who cries asshole. Like it just doesn't, it's real easy to go, all right. And I kind of have backed off on that because I want to be able to, I want, you know, when there's an actual issue that comes up, them to actually listen to me. Because after a while, you just kind of, and I don't blame them because I sound the same whether I'm talking about a major issue that needs to be fixed right away or I don't like these glasses. Like these cups that we use, because these particular cups, which doesn't matter at all, but I personally don't like them because they, this set of glasses doesn't match those set of glasses and it's not as easy to stack. It doesn't matter. It's really not that big of a deal. But the thing is, I'm just as vocal and passionate about it as if it did matter. So you kind of have to limit. If you want them to listen to you, you kind of have to not come at them every day about something dumb. And it took me a bit to learn that, and I've kind of backed off. But I really, there was an issue with a certain coworker who I didn't particularly like working with. He was kind of new, and he's doing a couple of different things, and he was bussing, and I didn't like the way he was bussing, and nobody else did either. And I almost talked to him about it, but then I thought about it, and I thought about who I am and what they, you know, what they probably perceive me as, because they love my work. And but when I get into that mode of this needs to be fixed, they just kind of go, all right. And then they fix it eventually if they notice it. It's not, no, they don't take my word for it. And I don't blame them. You kind of got to take me with a salt shaker. It's just, I got a lot. I'm coming at you with a lot all the time. But I didn't say anything about it because the guy was bugging everybody else. And I went, you know what? If it doesn't come from me, and comes from somebody else who doesn't complain about something that's not working, maybe it'll get fixed. And sure as shit, he got moved. So they didn't, because he was doing dishing, he was doing some dishwashing, and then, you know, when I wasn't working, and then also bussing, and now he's just doing dishwashing. They're like, oh, this is not a good fit. Yeah, you're goddamn right, it's not a good fit. He sucks, was kind of my thing. But they figured it out, and I didn't have to say anything. And I went, oh, that's right. I don't have to point every single thing out. See, some other people are paying attention. It's not just me. I'm not holding the whole place together. I know deep down inside that I'm not holding the whole place together, but you feel like that sometimes when you notice everything because your brain's working all the time. So you're like, is nobody else know? Yeah, they noticed, John. They got it. So that was nice. Also, I figured out, in a related note, that I'm a much more pleasant person to be around at work since they changed the coffee. We had some shitty-ass coffee for a long time. And then we got good coffee. And then stepped down, like, how much the concentration for making the... I know you don't care, but they make the cold brew coffee. They were using 7 cups. Now they're using 6 cups and not brewing it as long. So it's not as, it's just not as strong and like that. And you will not, I mean, I can't describe having really good coffee, how much apparently it's that easy for my mood is give me good coffee. And I know that it's like, yeah, aren't you a coffee fanatic? Isn't it like you're one of your only two vices left? That makes sense. It does make sense, but it didn't make any... I didn't notice. I didn't notice till I got good coffee. And then I'm like, fuck yeah. This place is great. Yes, I will say hi back to you instead of scowl like I normally do. Hi. It's good to see you. As far as you know. It's crazy. There's no point to this. Just know that work's going well for me because the coffee's good. It's really all I need. We're going to double your workload. Will you double my coffee load? Yes. Awesome. I'm in. It really is an interesting thing to me how the job of dishwashing has evolved for me personally. I don't remember anything I really talk about in these podcasts. Like if I was really up on my game, the descriptions of every episode would be more detailed. But I've seen like some podcast episodes that people just with timestamps and like really descriptive. Like, it's like, why even listen to the episode? I mean, I can see the whole thing. Like, the cliff notes are in the description. It's too much. That doesn't make any sense for what the fuck I do. So I don't remember how much I've talked about dishwashing. But it's just weird how it all worked out because I got... You know, I got my first dish job in San Antonio because I couldn't get any other job. And it was funny to me because it makes sense because I got the job. I didn't have to have a resume or anything. It was more of a, you know, are you alive? Yes. Can you start now? All right. That was basically it. That's like your interview. Have you watched dishes before? No. Well, good luck. You know, it was that kind of a deal. And it was the only job I could get at the time. And I stuck with it. And it just... It's weird the level of zen that you can get in certain times. It's at the beginning... And at the end, mainly, because in the middle, it's during service and you got to be paying attention, which actually feeds right into the fact that I'm hyper aware. My brain's going, you know, 1,000 miles a minute. So I can actually see multiple things going on at the same time and planning out prioritization of what needs to be washed and stuff. And it just... You know, some might say overthinking the job, but it keeps me going. But at the beginning, when there's just a bunch of stuff to wash, and at the end, when there's a bunch of things to wash because they basically slam you with everything that they're closing down, you just zone the fuck out, and it's meditation. it's really this kind of relaxing thing. And I put on, I tend to put on something that I can just zone out to and just lose myself in, which is why I enjoy, dub and prog rock and like electro, 90s electro. I just can lose myself in it. But it's amazing how it's just evolved to where, you know, I'm very much all about being, you know, I'm a professional, god damn it, kind of a thing. Because it's and I've stuck with it because I've gotten to places to where, you know, I wash dishes during the day now. I get paid decently for dishwashing. Like for that job, I get paid well for, if that makes sense. You know, they tip me out, that kind of thing. And it's because I've looked around at possibly doing other things, but that's the whole deal. Is there another job that allows you to finish your day and you're not taking any work home with you mentally? Like, you're not thinking about it and dreading going back to work the next day, or more shit you got to do the next day. I mean, there's a finish every day. Like, you're done. When you're done, you're done. You're like, well, no, that's it. You know, I've gotten closure of this day. And it's just, and you don't feel like your soul's been sucked out of your body by fluorescent lights in a cloth-covered box. And it's so, it's going to be hard to do anything else for me as a day job because I enjoy it so much. Because I really get into the thing. Because I don't have to be nice to anybody. I mean, I am. I'm all right. But I don't have to be, because I don't interact with customers. You know, I'm technically in the hospitality industry, but not really. Everybody around me is in the hospitality business. I'm in the washing dishes business. I don't have to interact with these fuckers. You know, no, thank you for your business. I don't have to talk to you. I mean, that's great. But I don't. I don't have to wear a fucking tie if I don't want to. I don't have to iron my clothes. You know, it's just, I don't have a boss. I just work, you know, I feel like a contractor almost because I'm in charge of my own shit. Man, not having a boss, how much would you work, like how much money would you give up to not have somebody on your ass? That's kind of that's kind of the thing. You start looking, you know, look on Craigslist for other jobs and it's just like, I see them, but I'm like, is it worth the money? Let's say that they overlook the fact that I'm a convicted felon and that my job history for the past 7 years has been dishwashing. Let's say they look over that and it's fine and the degree, but then it's a matter of, you know, can I play ball with that kind of micromanaging scheme? I don't think I can. So it's been a really good fit. I enjoy it, man. And there's something to be said about finding something that you enjoy doing. Anyway, I've got one other thing I wanted to talk about. So a couple weeks ago, I strained a muscle in my hand and had to wrap it. And, it fucking hurt. Like, I just was, you know, I was helping cut potatoes at work, which I used to do at my old job, and they just needed, it was sort of an emergency thing, and I went too fast, I think. And it's like a very specific motion. And the thing is that I think that particular muscle has been weakened in my, you know, I did something to it because I injured it like months and months ago, the same hand in the same kind of way I kind of strained it, trying to open a jar at work for a server. She asked me, you know, if I could open this jar of jam, jelly, the one that doesn't shake, Jam. All right, so it was Jam, and I strained really hard, and I could, and like I hurt myself on a jar, which is ridiculous, and made me feel old. But I bring it up because this is the same hand that, if you've been following the podcast since I started, about the third or fourth week, you may remember me talking about cutting the tip of my finger off trying to open a packet of smoothie ingredients because I used a knife. I'm not saying it was a smart thing, but yeah, which since then, I literally have four pairs of scissors lying around everywhere. I went out and like bought several pairs of scissors after that. It's like, you know, hindsight 2020 kind of a deal. So not going to do that again, but same hand, same side. In high school, when playing football, I dislocated my right shoulder, same side. Totally fucked myself up. So this is, and then also, it was the right arm that I got a major infection when being a drug addict. So basically, my girlfriend said that I'm pretty much Crispin Glover from Hot Tub Time Machine. If you've seen that movie, and if you haven't, I don't even know why we're talking. No, it's fine. But Crispin Glover's character, he works for the ski resort in the movie Hot Tub Time Machine, and in present day, he's missing his arm. And so in the past, so the running gag is, you keep waiting for him to lose his arm in the past, and you're like, oh, nope, not this time. No. And that's exactly who I am, apparently. It's just biding my time till I completely lose, or partly lose my right arm. I don't know. Everything happens to that side from the shoulder on down. So that's the thing, is that and the irony of the infection, because what I got in my right arm when I was a heroin addict is I had what was called cellulitis. And cellulitis is basically a bacteria infection that happens. It's basically, let's see, the affected skin appears swollen and red and is typically painful and warm to the touch. And it happens when basically bacteria gets into a wound or a cut, or in my case, you know, from the needle sticking into my arm. And the problem with the thing about cellulitis is it can be typical of needle users, but it's more typical, like it's related to like animal bites, spider bites, or just, you know, bacteria getting into any kind of like not cleaning a wound properly and that sort of thing. So, you know, so it was one of those things where I basically, and the irony here is that drug users tend to like to watch movies that feature their drug in it. So like, I'm sure meth heads love the movie Spun. And while I was a junkie, yeah, I liked watching Trainspotting, and we even watched Requiem for a Dream. And the thing, and the irony here is that watching Requiem for a Dream, you got to sit there as a drug addict and watching them. And anytime they did something that we were like, come on, man, like you're critiquing the junkies on screen versus being a real life junkie. And it was, you know, so the whole Jared Leto character, you're like going, why does he keep, you know, he's got this major infection and he keeps doing drugs in the infected arm. And it's like, dude, you've got blood vessels everywhere. There's veins everywhere. You're skinny. How the fuck are you doing this? This guy is an idiot. You're just totally criticizing a fictitious person. And that was the whole thing. It was all like, that's ridiculous. That was my attitude, was like, that would never happen to me. And then, about a year later, because I wasn't getting clean needles all the time, so what I was doing, I mean, I was using my own needles. They're like, I wouldn't share needles, you know, I'm just using my, so I'm using my own, but you're supposed to, but the only way you can do that is if you bleach them. Like, you rinse them out with bleach all the time, and you have to do it like several times. And even then, it's not recommended. Why would anybody recommend using a needle more than once? You don't. But that's the trick, quote unquote, for people who can't get needles or can't afford to pay for needles because you're spending it all on the drugs. So you just bleach out the needles over and over. And apparently, I didn't do that well enough. So I gave myself cellulitis. And what sucks about it is that because it looks and feels just like if you miss and you don't hit your vein right, and then it just kind of gets red and it's, you know, and it's like, oh, and then it goes away after a day. But it didn't go away. And it got worse and worse. And finally, after people convinced me, I had friends who hadn't seen me in a while, like, nah, that doesn't look good, man. You should go to the ER. And I'm like, ah. Because I was taking all this ibuprofen, which was keeping down the swelling and keeping down. I was just taking a bunch of it. And so I finally went into the ER. And I thought, this would just be real quick or whatever. And they're like, no, you're about 24 hours from full-blown staph infection. So there's like this huge scar on my arm, on my forearm, like on the inside of my forearm. Because they had to cut all of that stuff out. It was that infected. They had to take all this stuff out. And it was a huge scar. And then I basically used this thing to heal it back. So I've got this huge scar on my right arm. And that's the irony of the whole thing, is that I almost requiemed myself after mocking the movie. It's a good call, John. So yeah. I got to watch out for my right side, but also maybe avoid being a drug addict. Definitely avoid the needle, people. That's yet another reason to do that. I would stay away from them. But also, it was in 2010, so they basically put, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. And ironically, they were giving me painkillers for 2 weeks. They were giving me Dilaudid, which is the shit, by the way. Because cellulitis isn't specific just to heroin addicts, you know, like an abscess or something that's clearly because of drugs. It was nice and vague, so, you know, and I was in pain, and it was in 2010, so it was before people really, like, were cracking down on opiates. So that's why I didn't really hit bottom, even for being in the hospital for 2 weeks, because I basically got my drug connection, my fix, for 2 weeks in the hospital. So I hit bottom a little bit later. Just a few months later, though. Anyway. Yeah. Bummer, huh? No, it's not. Here's the funny thing. When I went to rehab. So I went to rehab not like 4 months later. So it was just 4 months after getting out of the hospital that I was in rehab. And I remember, you know, getting cleaned up and talking to one of my fellow rehab people. And I told him, it was my buddy, and I said, man, you know what? When we get out of here, I'm going to get a tattoo that reminds me, you know, like I wanted to get a tattoo that was like recovery related, to remind me why it's a bad idea to do heroin, you know. And he goes, so you want something visible on your body that when you look at it, you're reminded that maybe doing heroin with needles is a bad idea? And I went, yeah. And then he said, what, kind of like a huge fucking scar? And then I went, oh, right. I kind of do have one. Here's this. Can I get a redundant tattoo? No. So no, I didn't get a tattoo. I just look at my arm and go, that's right. It's not a good idea. Let's not go back to that shit. And I never did. All right, guys. That's it. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week. I will, I'll watch out for my right arm. And you watch out for yours. This has been Yes, I'm Still Sober. I'm John Rabin. Later.